Have you ever felt something essential is missing from modern life? A nagging emptiness despite comfort and safety? George Monbiot names this feeling ecological boredom, and it drives everything from our obsession with phantom big cats to our fascination with fugitives hiding in the wilderness. We evolved for crisis and challenge, yet live in sanitized predictability. The solution isn't abandoning civilization, but rewilding, allowing natural processes to resume in landscapes we've managed into sterility. This means reintroducing missing species, letting trees reclaim barren hills, and accepting that what we call pristine countryside might actually be ecological desert. Rewilding promises something radical: ecological change reversing direction, creating abundance instead of loss. It's about expanding human opportunities, not constraining them, offering new freedoms in self-willed lands where we might roam among species that once shaped our evolutionary history. The Cambrian Mountains stretch across 460 square miles of Wales, celebrated for their unspoiled wilderness and utter solitude. Yet walking these treeless slopes reveals something disturbing: almost no life. The nibbled grassland contains just two flowering plants, purple moorgrass and tormentil, the only species sheep won't eat. No birds break the silence. The emptiness feels post-apocalyptic, like poisoned land. Pollen cores reveal that 8,000 years ago, these mountains were densely forested with hazel, oak, alder, pine, birch, elm, lime, and ash. Neolithic farmers gradually cleared this landscape for sheep grazing. What appears natural today, open heaths, moors, bare rock, is actually the result of millennia of grazing. Because sheep never existed in Britain's native ecosystem, vegetation evolved no defenses against them. They've stripped soil fertility and caused more environmental damage than all building development combined. Hill farming survives entirely on subsidies, yet contributes remarkably little. Wales imports 7 times more meat than it exports, despite 3/4 of its land devoted to livestock. The average Welsh sheep farm receives $53,000 in subsidies against $33,000 net income, a $20,000 farming loss. Walking produces over $500 million for the Welsh economy, and wildlife activity generates $1,900 million, compared to just $400 million from hill farming. Sheep farming causes floods by removing vegetation that absorbs rainfall and compacting soil. The River Wye now experiences triple the floods it saw 70 years ago without corresponding rainfall increases. Subsidy rules actively promote ecological destruction, requiring farmers to prevent unwanted vegetation and disqualifying pastures with more than 50 trees per hectare. We're paying vast sums to maintain ecological deserts that damage our economy, increase flooding, and destroy biodiversity, all while calling it conservation. Hope emerges in unexpected places. Richie Tassel's experimental plot in the Cambrian Mountains, grazed for thousands of years, infertile, acidic, storm-scoured, seemed unpromising. Yet 20 years after excluding sheep, the transformation is remarkable. Trees now stand thick as a man's calf and 20 feet high. Blue tits, coal tits, and long tail tits work through branches picking insects. Most surprisingly, planting was often unnecessary. Where they'd turned over turf, birch seeds blown from surviving trees colonized exposed soil. Almost every tree we planted has been overwhelmed by native birch, Richie explains. Birch chases retreating glaciers, seeding into exposed soils before coarse grass establishes. Its slightly alkaline leaf litter prepares acid soils for other trees. Birch bilitis toadstools grow at twisted trunks, while foxgloves and ferns flourish beneath. The beginnings of a complex ecosystem emerging from barren pasture. Nature, given the slightest opportunity, remembers how to heal itself. On a raw November day, 2 chocolate-colored beavers waddle into a Welsh pond, the first to return after extinction. Beavers are keystone species, with impacts far exceeding their numbers. They alter river flow, fell trees, and excavate burrows, creating habitats for water voles, otters, ducks, frogs, fish, and insects. Wyoming beaver ponds harbor 75 times more water birds than streams without them. The most dramatic ecological concept is the trophic cascade, when top predators change species they never directly contact. When wolves returned to Yellowstone in 1995, deer avoided vulnerable valleys. Riverbank trees, previously suppressed by browsing, quintupled in height within 6 years, shading streams and boosting fish and songbird populations. Beaver colonies increased from 1 to 12. Throughout the wolves' absence, park managers failed to control deer despite intense hunting. Wolf predation differs fundamentally. Wolves hunt continuously, pursue rather than ambush, and select different prey. A single species can transform entire ecosystems. Cultural fear of wolves far exceeds reality. Despite mythology, wolves cause virtually no human deaths, 0.08 per year in North America, compared to vending machines, 2.2, cows, 20, dogs, 31, or toothpicks, 170. Over 50 years, only 9 people died from wolves across Europe and Russia combined. While wolves threaten livestock, deterrents like livestock protection collars with emetics could teach avoidance. The Scottish Highlands offer ideal reintroduction habitat, abundant deer, low human density, and space for 250 wolves. Reintroduction could benefit estate owners financially by eliminating expensive hind culling while maintaining stag populations. Rewilding advances rapidly across Europe. Wolves, extinct in France between 1927 to 1993, now number over 200. European bison rebounded from 54 after World War I to 3,000 today. Beavers increased 1,000-fold to 700,000. Slovenia exemplifies this transformation. World War I photographs show treeless grassland, now dense forest reclaimed after human tragedy. What began in tragedy became opportunity, with the region now attracting lucrative high-end tourism. Conservation organizations often obstruct rewilding. Glasslyn, the Montgomeryshire Wildlife Trust's biggest and wildest reserve, exemplifies this paradox. Knee-high heather, sparse flowers, fruitless bilberry, sheep droppings, erosion gullies. Management plans actively maintain this degradation, removing invasive native trees like rowan and birch, even strip grazing grassland with cattle to maximize impact. The circularity is maddening. They protect degraded habitats for species like red grouse that only thrive in damaged landscapes, then use these as key indicators of ecosystem health. Conservation has inverted, protecting species adapted to damaged landscapes rather than envisioning what could flourish naturally. Rewilding offers better protection. Around 40% of creatures extinct in Britain since 1800 lived in woodlands. Europe's waters once teemed with oyster reefs across bays, 20-pound lobsters as pig feed, 5-foot cod. Marine reserves offer the surest restoration path. Across 124 studied reserves, total biomass quadrupled when fishing stopped, with visible shifts within 2 to 5 years. On his final kayaking trip, Mombiat watches sunset fade behind mountains, envisioning a rewilded future, trees returning to bare slopes, whales repopulating the bay. A young dolphin surfaces beside his boat, circling close before vanishing into darkness. At Glen Affric in Scotland, inside a 50-hectare enclosure established in 1990, young pines grow alongside rowans, birch, and juniper, with rare orchids in the understory, a stark contrast to the deer-nibbled landscape beyond the fence. Ecological restoration is a work of hope, Alan Watson Featherstone tells him. This captures rewilding's essence, not nostalgic recreation of the past, but a forward-looking project expanding possibilities for all life. It offers a path beyond ecological boredom toward richer engagement with the natural world. We don't need to retreat from nature, we need to re-involve ourselves, allowing ourselves to roam among species that once shaped who we are. The wild is calling back. Will we answer?